hired me 11 years later. So his office became my office, right? Full circle moment. I ended up becoming the head strength and conditioning coach of Ohio State football. And, you know, I just think back to 11 years before that, I walked in there.
Eric Lichter, a businessman plus two university, many years at The Ohio State University as director of football performance, having spent time with NFL draft picks, NBA draft picks, LeBron James. This guy is a vibe himself. He's got a big bleached blonde beard. He's got tattoos up to his ankles and wrists, killer calves. He coaches in Crocs. Not only is he a vibe, but his training sessions are a vibe. And one thing I know for sure, his athletes get faster and they have a great time doing it. Eric, how are you doing today?
Matt, what is up, man? That is money. I appreciate that. The tattoos up to the ankles. You mean down to the ankles?
Down to the ankles.
There we go.
Up to the wrists. Yep.
The bleach blonde thing, though, is correct. This thing takes a while. I naturally have brown hair like you, dark brown hair, although my hair and my head fell out when I was probably 19 in college, man. So this is all I got. So I got to do something with it.
Have to take advantage. So is there anything I missed about your background? I know you've done a lot. Anything big that I missed?
You trust me. You nailed it, man. It's all
fantastic.
Good.
So a little bit about how we know each other. I shot a marketing video for 1080 Motion out in Columbus at his business. Basically how they use not one, not two, but three of their 1080 sprints. And
soon to be four.
Soon to be four. Yes. We are looking to get our second one as well. But the whole world is on back order, so it's taking a little bit longer than I'm sure we are all planning. But speed work is what he does, and he's very good at doing that. But his career has been super interesting, just as we got to chat a little bit just between your sessions and whatnot. So I'm excited to get into it. So looking back, what was kind of the biggest fork in the road or kind of moment where if you took a left instead of a right, all this would be different?
Stories or you know, defining moments. But I think the one thing that you just said, if I went left instead of right, or maybe in my case, if I would have stayed on the path I was on and not made a turn, everything would be different. And that was really in college. So I was a college high school football player, you know, had pursued playing college football. And basically, you know, I got started. My parents started me in high school early. I was 16. I turned 16 right at the beginning of my senior year. So think about that. Like, you think about all the reclassifications, either actually guys moving up now to get paid, right? Because of NIL. But for before that, holdbacks, right? Parents would hold their kids back and start them late on purpose so that they'd be 18 going into their senior year, right? And maybe be more able to secure a scholarship or whatever. But my parents started me young. This was out in Arizona. So long story short, I was a tweener. I ended up developing really late. I had a great senior year in high school, made all state, but I was basically just on that tweener. I wasn't a D1 prospect. So I needed to go the junior college route to prove myself. So in Arizona at the time, this is in like 1992, really good junior college league out there, JUCO. So I ended up, you know, getting hurt my freshman year. I played four games my freshman year in junior college and got shut down because of neck stingers. I was starting to get really serious nerve damage in my neck. Then come back my sophomore year, you know, rehab from that, really promising, you know, sophomore season, preseason lists, all that, dominating for three or four games, tore my ACL. I tore every ligament in my knee that mattered, including my ACL, big one. And so that was a big chop down moment. Still was fortunate enough to get a couple Division I offers. I got a Division I AA offer from Weber State University in Ogden, Utah. I took that. That was better than the UNLV offer that I had. I wouldn't have been, me and Vegas would not have been a good match. And the football team was terrible at the time. But I went to Weber State. 9 months later, after that ACL tear, tore my ACL again. Same knee, same one. Major dive off the cliff. Left school, didn't even want to get the surgery, didn't even want to talk to anyone. There's a lot in between that, but long story short, it was my strength coach who from Weber State who called me and said, man, come back to school, get the surgery. You got a red shirt year. You never used your red shirt. You could come back. You could take 18 months this time and you could come back and play as a fifth year senior, man, make it happen. And he basically said, he's going to go on the rehab program with me. He's going to do every squat rep that I do, every split leg lunge, split squat, you know, the whole deal. And he ended up talking me into going back. And at the time I was in criminal justice. So I was going to be a detective or a homicide detective or an FBI, who knows, you know, something in criminal justice. And through that process of Mike Jenkins, that was the coach's name at the time, he ended up going on and becoming the strength coach at Marshall with the whole Randy Moss and Chad Pennington. You know, he was the strength coach there, but he was my strength coach before that. And he grabbed my hand, man. He got in the weight room with me for 18 months. We grinded it out. And it was that experience of coming back and that turned me. And I left criminal justice and I went into exercise physiology and I switched, you know, junior year of college, I switched over and that was the turn. So imagine, you know, because this is what I become known for is working with athletes and helping them get ready for their, you know, competition moments, whether it's draft training, combine, a college season, high school season, whatever, pro season. So that was the big turn. It was the experience of me having to overcome adversity, is the experience of me having to kind of, everything's cool when you're on the mountaintops, right? But how do you respond when you're in the valleys? And so, you know, Mike, I credit Mike really for that experience. And by the way, I did come back. I played my senior year and played all 12 games. I wore a knee brace. You know, it's interesting. I took a major hit in like, I don't know, game 10 or 9, Portland State. My ACL brace bent. I mean, completely bent, like awful. And I was like, I'm not going to wear a knee brace. I'm like, no, actually, I am. You know, and can you imagine that would have been the third one? But anyway, I made it back and I made that turn. So I would think that's the fork in the road. That's what kind of put me on the path to, you know, to be a strength conditioning performance coach and to work with athletes. Mm-hmm.
So prior to that, did you have any sort of beyond average relationship with this guy, or when he called you, was it kind of more of a surprise to you?
No, we had a good relationship. You know, he came in right when I came in and completely changed the culture of training. I mean, at Weber State at the time, they had, you know, Nautilus machines. And I mean, you know, he all of a sudden started building platforms and, you know, and it's like, what's this? What's an Olympic lift? And so, you know, he completely changed that culture. So I had a really good relationship with him. So, yeah. And, you know, I always tell people, you know, sometimes it's not a matter of, you know, if adversity is going to hit, it's a matter of when for everybody. And everybody's, you know, everybody's struggles are different, right? Everybody's challenges are different. A lot of times we look at someone and we go, oh, that guy's got, or that person has it all. I mean, God, their life is perfect. You don't really know, you know, what struggles, but I try to tell people all the time, right? You never really know someone until they're tested. Like it all sounds good. You know, I can tell you, hey, we're going to go into business together, or hey, we're going to do this or that. It all sounds good, but you really don't know someone until you see the bullets flying at them and not, you know, away from them. And sometimes you don't know why things are happening. I didn't know why I have all this ability. Why can't I just finish a season? Why can't it happen for me? Why can't I get, you know, get that scholarship or that D1? What, you know, why is my world always crumbling? And you just have to keep going. Sometimes when a door slams shut, either, you know, you weren't meant to go through that door, or you weren't meant to go through that door. And, you know, you got to keep going and keep pushing and find another one. And so I just try to tell people all the time that you truly, you have to be grateful for adversity. You should actually pray for it. You should actually be like, if things are going good, you should be like, God darn it, I need something to go bad because I need to see how I'm going to come back from it. I need to see how I'm going to respond because life is about the response. We know this. We've all heard, you know, the E plus R equal, I mean, but it is so true. And I think you truly become who you are, and your strength, your character, and your ability to succeed is always built in the valleys. It is never built on the mountaintops. And I really have a great deal of respect for people that get whacked all the way down. I mean, they are at rock bottom. I don't care if it's from them making bad decisions. I don't care if it's, you know, just terrible circumstances. You know, you've got to really, I have great respect for people that have gotten themselves up off the carpet, scrape themselves up off the floor or at the absolute bottom of the well and climb back out, because it takes toughness and it takes a absolute, you know, mental fortitude and courage and just, I could go on and on. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I really do. I respect it. You have to, when adversity comes, be grateful for it, because if you come out on the other side of it, you are going to be twice the person you were and ready for the next challenge. Life is all about challenges, and you know, don't be looking at the person. Everything's great for them. Their time's going to come too. So, you know, that is like something that you know, I'm grateful for. My whole life is built on setbacks. Like, this is just the way it's been. I'm going to tell you another one here in just a second, because I know you're going to ask me a question. I'm going to tell you a story you don't know, but it's another setback for a comeback, and it's a full circle moment. But yeah. So anyway, I just, you know, it happened to me multiple times, and I didn't know at the time why it was happening to me, but now I know. You know, I was meant to be a coach. I was meant to be that guy that helps other people, helps them, look, get up off the ground, you know, and here's what you need to do, because I lived it.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And there's so many quotes and cliches that we could probably bounce around, but you know, everyone's got a plan until you get hit in the face. I think that's Mike Tyson. And it's easy when everything's going good, just to feel good, enjoy, kind of settle, and that becomes your average. But there's a reason why average is average, is because there's stuff above it and there's stuff below it. You know, anyone can be successful, but just how you handle it. And I like saying when, not if. Myself personally, I had a very successful freshman year. I went walk on to redshirt to getting a jersey to College World Series in 1 year. So I went from all of that to sophomore slump. Man, did that suck. You feel like you have the world in the chokehold. You just crushed it. And then I went from, I think, like 20 innings over like two-thirds of a season to 8 innings in a whole season. And it was just like, man, it was two things from that experience made me like kind of what I am right now. It was first not getting that jersey, because I worked twice as hard and I was super prepared. And it's interesting, I've been telling that story a little more recently. And I always say, if I had gotten a jersey right away, I wouldn't have worked nearly as hard. Mm-hmm. When that online roster said Matt with no number next to it, and I called coach and he said, you're redshirting. And I was like, well, I'm the second best freshman you got. So, but then if I didn't have that sophomore slump and I just rode that high my freshman year, I probably wouldn't have had the solid next 2 years that I did. So it's one of those things that sucks in the moment, but I think having that mindset of there is a reason, I am grateful now, even if I don't know why, obviously easier said than done. But it's cool that came full circle and that turned into your very successful career now. So very cool how it does come around, and you might learn it in a year, you might learn it in 10 years, but it usually does. So
yeah, it takes you time to look back and go, that's why. But yeah, it's just, you got to keep going.
Mm-hmm. For sure. All you can do is keep going. So that'll lead us into our next question. The coolest / craziest story you have thus far of your career.
The coolest, craziest story. So I think this is like the comeback full circle, you know, story. But when I graduated from Weber State, my mother had already moved to Columbus, Ohio. We grew up out in Arizona, and she was actually a head varsity coach at Ohio State. She was the head synchronized swimming coach for Ohio State. She was an Olympic coach, and Ohio State has a very traditional synchronized swimming team, you know, bazillion national championships, and kind of Ohio State and Stanford always, you know, go at it. But she gets the job and she's doing really well. And she kind of carves a path for me to come to Ohio State and, you know, become a intern / GA strength conditioning, you know, coach under the then guru. The guy's name was Dave Kennedy. And so this was like 1996, 1997, you know, strength and conditioning as a profession was nowhere near than what it is today. Right. I mean, there's some strength coach is going to eclipse $1 million contract a year here very soon. Maybe it's next year, you know, some Division I Power Five school is going to pay a strength coach $1 million a year. Back then it was like, you know, kind of maybe some schools have them, some schools don't, but you know, Nebraska had Boyd Epley and Ohio State had Dave Kennedy, and Dave had this reputation for like building the Eddie Georges and the Orlando Paces, and all these guys would come back, you know, they just want to train with Coach Kennedy. And it was kind of the model that you see now before it really existed. Like John Cooper gave Dave Kennedy all the autonomy and all the control of the program. Like Dave ran the program. Okay. And so, and his ego was bigger than the horseshoe, the size of, you know, our football stadium. I didn't know this at the time. I just knew of the guy and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, my mother says, hey, I got you, you know, you're connected, you're set up, you're going to come to Columbus, and Coach Kennedy says he's going to take you in, yada, yada. And so, oh man, this is amazing. So my wife and I, we pack up our two boxer dogs, and we pack up everything we have in my brown CJ7 Jeep, and we drive across from Ogden, Utah to Columbus, Ohio. It's like a 3-day drive, two boxer dogs hanging out of the Jeep. And, you know, like I'm on these roads to like through Nebraska and Iowa, and there's construction, and like if the wind blows, your Jeep blows off the road and you die. I mean, it was a treacherous trip, man. And, you know, I make this big trip. I get out to Columbus. I get everything set up. I've got my date to show up at the Woody Hayes and meet Coach K and figure out like what my marching orders are. And I'm thinking I'm going to go to grad school for free, because that's my mom's deal. And somehow the miscommunication got lost, man. So
were you, and what was your coaching experience at that time?
Zero. I mean, I just finished playing college football. I just finished So like, you know, this is in April. I'm a college graduate. I just finished my last college game in the November before that. So 4 months later, I graduate after that fifth year, you know, senior, didn't get hurt, played all my football games. 4.5 months later, I'm graduating and I'm packing up and going to Columbus, Ohio. And I get there, I get to Columbus, and about 2 weeks later, I've got my appointment date on the calendar to go meet Coach K, get started. I haven't talked to him at all, but my mother's got it hooked up. So anyway, I get to the Woody Hayes. It's not the Woody Hayes that it is today. I can't get in. The place is locked. Everywhere is locked. I mean, I have an 11:30 appointment. I'm there at like 11 o'clock sharp. 11:20, I'm knocking on doors. I can't get in. I'm starting to get nervous. 11:45, I'm 15 minutes late. 12:15, I'm 45 minutes late. I can't get into the building. I don't know what to do. Finally, someone opens the door. I'm knocking on every door all around the building, walking around the parking lot. They finally let me in. They're like, Coach K? Yeah, he's, you know, here's the weight room down here. They walk me through this hall. Yeah, I think it was the running back coach gets me in, and I finally get walked into Coach K's office, and I'm nervous as hell. I'm sweating. I'm 45 minutes late. Not to my fault, but I couldn't get in. He didn't even know who I am. He didn't know we had an appointment. He didn't, or he knew, but he forgot or wasn't important. Anyway, that meeting lasted 5-10 minutes, maybe. I said, hey, Coach K, I'm Eric Lichter. I'm Linda Lichter-Witter's son. I'm supposed to have an appointment with you. I'm sorry, I'm late. He basically starts dropping F-bombs, you know, like, hey, I can't use you, you know, you need to like, you need to go cut your teeth with someone you know in the industry. Like, who do you know that you could GA for an intern with in the industry? And I'm like, I think that's what I thought that was, what I was doing here. And he's like, he basically said, get the F out of here. You don't know until you know how to motivate and control athletes. And I can't use you. I don't care, you know, what degree you have. Get the ass out of here. Literally kicked me right out the door. And so I was shocked. I mean, I was a 23-year-old, like, walked out, like, what just happened? Like, what is going on? Like, did I wake up in a nightmare? Am I in the reality? Like, what just happened? So I walked out, you know, I'm in Columbus, Ohio. My wife, she's pregnant. Like, I'm just lost. So I had to figure out how I'm going to make money and what am I going to do and what's my life going to be. You know, I'm just sort of at that valley again, right? So many, many things happened between that moment and, you know, basically, I don't know, 11 years later. But here's the comeback moment. And again, there's a million steps, ups and downs and ebbs and flows. But Jim Tressel fired Dave Kennedy. Now, he did hire one other strength coach in between me and Dave Kennedy. But long story short, he fired his and hired me 11 years later. So his office became my office, right? Full circle moment. I ended up becoming the head strength and conditioning coach of Ohio State football. And, you know, I just think back to 11 years before that, I walked in there and I just got my head pissed on, right? Like, literally, you know, get out of here, scrub. And, you know, I have no idea if to this day he even knows, you know, that, or that the kid that he kicked out of that and totally disrespected, you know, came back and held that job and, you know, did decently well there. And, you know, who knows, but, you know, that was a full circle moment, right? So that's kind of a crazy story. And at that time I had no college experience, like none. So I had become a personal trainer after he threw me out. I built up a really big lucrative personal training career, but I wasn't interested in training doctors, wives, and lawyers. That wasn't what, you know, my eye was on the prize of starting an athlete training center the entire time. And it was going to be in Columbus. It ended up being in Cleveland. I ended up in Youngstown, Ohio, personally training a couple billionaire families. So all these dots connected, but I ended up opening my private sector business in Cleveland. And from 1999 to 2006, you know, many struggles in that too, you know, but my partner and I built a great business, LeBron James, 25 first round NFL and NBA draft picks, two Heisman Trophy winners, had trained some of the fastest, you know, runners, Ted Ginn Jr., and just really a lot of grind, but, you know, finally success. And that led me to Ohio State. And so, yeah, man, that was the comeback, right? I told you my life built. I could tell you more setbacks. You wouldn't believe it. But, you know, again, just a chop me down moment. And reclimb, rebuild, stay at it, keep going, believe in yourself. You know, someone once told me you will never get a professional athlete. If you would have saw our training center in Euclid, Ohio, it was inside the Euclid Sports Plant, which was the old Fisher GM body plant. They used to build the old General Motors body there and then ship them off. That thing was a massive building, but it was in Euclid, Ohio, which is a very rundown, you know, place. And it looked like you're hiding dead bodies back there. I mean, it was, you had to go behind these railroad tracks. And someone said, you're going to start a training center there. You'll never get a suburban mom from Beechwood, Ohio, to send her high school kid here, never mind a professional athlete. And, you know, not only did we have LeBron and many, many athletes, but we had people coming from all over the world. Nene Hilario, Leandrino Barboso, both first round lottery, you know, well, Nene was a lottery pick. Leandrino was a first rounder in the NBA. Those guys came from Brazil. They didn't even speak English. We had translators in Euclid, Ohio, training them for the draft. But it was just crazy, you know, how if I always believed that that's what was going to happen to me. I had it in my mind that that's who I was and that's what was going to happen. And I was going to just keep pushing until it happened. And it's kind of crazy. But, you know, you just got to keep going and keep climbing and believing in yourself, and things will happen.
I can only imagine what that was like telling your wife slash your mom after that meeting? Because when I made the team, coach basically just ripped me apart and was like, I'm going to change everything about you as a pitcher. And if it works out over the fall, I'll keep you. If not, you're done. And I'm just like, oh, I thought I was kind of good, but I guess not. So when they asked, oh, hey, honey, you know, welcome home. How'd it go? What was that conversation like?
I looked at my mother and I said, what in the hell is wrong with you? Like, where did you, are you speaking Spanish and someone else is speaking English? Like, what just happened? And she was shocked. She basically said, no, Eric, he told me straight up that, you know, he'd take care of you. And she was pissed. You know, she was very upset. And, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, again, imagine if I would have got that. My life would be different. I don't think I'd have been in the private. Who knows where I'd have been? Who knows, you know, what I would have done, you know, but maybe I'd have been collegiately institutionalized, right? Like, I know so many strength coaches who can't ever see them. They would never survive one day in the private sector as an entrepreneur because they don't understand. They don't have the ability to say, you know what, I'm going to bet on me. They don't have the sales experience to go out there and sell themselves. They, you know, they're employees, they're institutionalized. They're used to working with athletes that have to be there and they don't have to prove their value or sell their value or worth or give a value proposition. So, I mean, I'm grateful again, just for, you know, the fact that I was sent out to the wolves and had to survive.
The private side is a beast in and of itself. And although it has the lowest amount of credibility, we'll say, just because the barrier for entry isn't as rigorous as college or pro, if you take the average private coach, you put them in the college side versus you take the average college coach, put them in the private side, that private is going to be way more successful in my biased opinion. But
Well, true. And you know, so like I said, I had never had any college experience. So I was really the first probably guy. I mean, maybe there was another that I don't know, but I was probably the first guy that I know of that got hired to a profile job like that. I mean, think about Ohio State. I mean, that's not, I don't want to knock anyone's, I was just going to say a school, but then that would get me in trouble. But I mean, clearly Ohio State is a brand that is like elite, right? I mean, you've got the, you know, Alabama's, Ohio State's, USC's, but that's an elitely brand. And to get that job and never have had 1 minute of collegiate, you know, team sport experience, you know, speaks to maybe the success we had with in the private sector and sending a lot of guys to Ohio State, but there was a big learning curve there too. So when I got there, you know, one of the things Jim Tressel, who I have great respect for, is an unbelievable mentor. At the time, he is a micromanager and he micromanaged the heck out of many things. But one of the things that he did was he did not allow me to pick my own staff. He put people on my staff, put people around me that had collegiate experience because he was a smart guy and knew, hey, this guy's used to being the boss. This guy's used to writing the rules and creating his own rules. And in this game, in this world, it doesn't work that way, right? So my first year or two, it was a learning experience of learning how to maneuver along the politics of college sports and to deal with athletic departments and the rules and having to appease 9 position coaches. Everybody wants something different. It was a, you know, cause it was a learning experience. So anyway, you know, I agree with you that the private sector will definitely do better, but if they've never been in the collegiate world, they're going to have a learning curve. I'm telling you, it's very different. Very different.
Very different for sure. And how long was your stint there? Ohio State?
6 seasons. Six years. Yep.
Yep. So last kind of question on that topic. So how did that come to be? Was college and sticking it to Coach K always on your radar? Was it just Jim Tressel showed up at your facility one day just through word of mouth and you were just like, who are you? Or you saw it online and he was familiar with you, you know, cause you'd sent a lot of athletes there. Basically, how did that, when it first became like a possibility, or your knowledge of the job, How did that all come to be?
Sticking it to Coach K was never on my mind. I was way too busy to even remember that. Like, even when I was being interviewed for the job and it was, you know, I was the top candidate, I wasn't like, oh my God, I can't wait to like send a postcard to Coach K with my middle finger up. Like, no, I wasn't even thinking like that, right? I didn't even remember that. I was just too busy. But what the process, it was many things. It was never one chop of the axe that took the tree down. It was many chops. So like I lived in Youngstown, Ohio, but was commuting to Cleveland every day. I was in Youngstown because I was training. What originally had brought me there from Columbus was a contract to train a couple really well. There's a few billionaire families in Youngstown. They're mall developers, right? You got the Cafaro family. You've got the DeBartolo family, which owned the 49ers for years. They're all from Youngstown. So Tressel was the head coach at Youngstown State at the time, and he was winning national championships there. So I had actually gone up there to just meet him and to, you know, tour his facilities and just learn about his strength program, because I was thinking about starting my strength and conditioning center in Youngstown for athletes, and I was going to see if I could get his support. So I had met him then. Then a couple of years later, I had decided to do my thing in Cleveland, and we were starting to get a name and we were starting to grow. And then, you know, after 3 or 4 years, I had been training LeBron, and then Maurice Claret wanted to train with us. And we were already training Troy Smith, Dante Whitner, Roy Hall, Anthony Gonzalez, all these guys that were being recruited by Ohio State. And they were top prospects out of Cleveland. And so Ohio State had to sort of come through us to recruit them and to, you know, to sort of come see them work out and some of those things. So I started meeting Mel Tucker, and, you know, he was on the staff at the time. Michigan State's head coach was working for Ohio State and Tressel at the time. So the relationships were building. We were training all the Glenville High School kids and Coach Ginn, Ted Ginn Sr., who's a legend. We were super close to him, and we were training all those kids. So that was another, you know, sort of attachment to Ohio State. Then Maurice Claret wanted to train with me, and he had just won the national title for Ohio State. And, you know, kind of all hell broke loose with him and trying to come back. And he was now going to challenge the NFL. And then there was this whole NCAA investigation. And we had this technology called the Power Plate. You're probably familiar with the Power Plate. And we were using the Power Plate and exploring with it. And Jim Tressel wanted to explore with the Power Plate. So he hired me to come down and introduce the Power Plate to the strength coach and the strength staff there. And then Maurice Claret, a week later, was allowed to leave Ohio State, probably because it was good to get him out of there for a while. And so Jim Tressel and the powers that be said, hey, why don't you get out of town and go train in Cleveland for a while and get out of here, right? So that happened, right? So all these things, and then my mother being there and winning national championship after national championship, she had, you know, this was going on now 10 years that she had been there since I had walked in the door and got thrown out, right? So just all these things were building. And then, of course, we were getting a reputation. I say we because I had a partner who was every bit as part of the success as I was there. We were getting this reputation of just, you know, killing it in training on the NBA side, on the NFL side, and high school side. And so, you know, that was just the kind of thing. And then what had happened, the final nail in the coffin was Troy Smith, Ted Ginn Jr., all these guys, Rob Sims, they were at Ohio State now. They had signed and they were playing, and they were dominating as freshmen and sophomores. And they were, you know, they were different than some of the other recruits coming in. They were trained better. They were able to play earlier. They were tougher. They were more mature. They had great speed. And, you know, they were telling Tressel, we don't like our strength coach. This guy, we don't like him, you know. And it was, you know, many of the team felt that their strength program wasn't adequate. And, you know, so Tressel made a change. And they had kind of internally talked him into taking a look at me, and he did it. He said, you know what? I want to do something outside the box. I want to do something that's different than any other model I see. I want to go and get a private sector guy. And so, you know, he started the interview process, and that was grueling because it wasn't just like offer me the job. He tested me for months. I don't have time to tell you all the things that all the tests that I had to pass to get offered that job. I can't tell you. Trestle is the master psychologist. Like, you have no idea how smart and calculated and just like that guy has plan A, B, C, D. I mean, he probably got 26 contingency plans. I'm telling you, like the tests, he put one test after another, after another, after another. And if I would have failed any one of those tests, he wouldn't offer me the job. I didn't know I was being tested at the time. I was extremely frustrated with how long the process took, but he was testing me because he was seeing if my ego was too big to play on a team. Coming from the private sector, LeBron James, all these, you know, all this, and you know, maybe a little bit of reputation that he heard, you know, he was testing me because keep in mind, he had gotten rid of one ego guy. Two strength coaches ago, when he got the job, John Cooper was fired and Dave Kennedy ran the program. And Jim Trestle comes in now, and Dave Kennedy's used to running the program, just like the model of Urban Mickey Marotti or today's model of head coach, strength coach. You know, they go everywhere and run the program. And that was not Trestle's model. And so Dave Kennedy is like, I run the program. And Trestle's like, no, you don't. I run the program. You're out. And so he was testing me to make sure that he wasn't having the same ego problem. Does that make sense? And I passed the test, but it was extremely frustrating along the way. And then the tests continued once I got the job, trust me. So but I'm grateful. Just the last thing I'll say is, maybe this is time for another podcast. We should come back on and I want to hear all the Jim Trestle stories, because I got stories. Like, I should tell you the story about when I asked him for a raise and I walked into his office and I asked him if he had 5 minutes. And he looked at his watch and he basically looked, I mean, the guy worked 22 hours a day, slept 2 hours a day. I swear to God's a machine. He looked at his watch, looked down at all his stuff, looked up at me and said, yeah, I got 5 minutes. I should have known right then not to walk in his office. I should have said, you know what? I'll come back another time. I didn't. That's another story. I can't. But anyway, I'm just grateful. At the time I was frustrated. But again, what Jim Trestle taught me through those years has carried me even to this day. The wisdom that I've gotten and the way that I've been able to deal with my, you know, team is a whole nother level now because I was taken through that.
Oh my, what a teaser for a future round two. I think we just have to make that happen.
You got it. The Jim Trestle stories. Oh my gosh. Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable.
The listener will have to come back. I love it. I love it. So last question before we both got to bounce. So on TSP, we're all practitioners, athletes, coaches. We all want to be better, get better at what we do. So if you could offer them one question and put on a sticky note, an app on their phone, whatever it may be, just as a daily or weekly reminder to help become better, what would that question be?
Seek the thing that makes you most uncomfortable. Go, you know, if it's sports science, if it's speed science, if it's, you know, biomechanics, if you want to be a coach and maybe it's sales, maybe it's being a little bit more entrepreneurial minded. Maybe there's coaches out there that don't want to get on Twitter and promote themselves because then the Twitter vitriol, I don't even go on Twitter because it's so ridiculous watching strength coaches, you know, who's got the bigger stick and who knows more science. And oh my God, it's unbelievable. That's why I used to never go to conventions either. Even as Ohio State's head guy, I wouldn't even go. But my advice to you is find what you truly like, whatever does not pulls you towards it, but pushes you away. Like, oh my God, it's the most uncomfortable thing. Actually dive in. You must go towards something that you just makes you ill and uncomfortable and spend some time and get some skill set there, because it is always through the path of the most resistance and the most discomfort that your biggest growth moments happen. That's my advice. It'll never change. Like, Matt, you're a speed science guy, right? Like, I'm a math guy, and, you know, this, that, and the other. Like, I love that stuff, right? I love biomechanics. I love all that stuff. But you know what I can't stand? You know what I hate doing more than anything? I can't stand reading peer review studies because I can't stand reading. I hate reading. I don't like reading anything. And all my biggest breakthroughs in life have come from me forcing myself to read books that I would rather you stick bamboo sticks under my fingernails than me sit down and read. And, you know, I read The Traveler's Gift from Andy Andrews. I've read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I've read, you know, Outwitting the Devil. And once I start reading, even though I hate it, I actually fall in love with it and can't put it down. And then the minute I'm done with it, I hate reading again. But it's in that moment of breakthrough that I actually love it. And it's crazy how it works. So even though it's like the most uncomfortable thing in the world, you're going to come a point where you push past a certain barrier or two where you're going to go, this feels incredible. It is the most like exhilarating, self-fulfilling accomplishment. You feel the worth of, you'll feel like Elon Musk. You'll feel like whatever the most titanist person you've ever studied. When you break through some of those discomforts that are huge, you will feel the most unbelievable feeling of yourself, of worth. And that's what you need to do. And you need to keep doing it. Because the minute you're done, the worth will leave you and you'll have to do it again. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So last thing, first to say thank you. Second to roll out the red carpet and shamelessly plug, emphasis on the shameless, everything you got going on. Where can the listeners get more of Coach Lichter?
Man, no shameless here. If you want to, you know, my Instagram is where I pretty much do most of my social media. My Instagram is at Eric Lichter. That's just ERICLICHTER. You'll see the beard, so you can't miss it. There's not many Eric Lichters out there. But and then Plus Two University is our speed and our training company. So that's at Plus Two University. That's PLUS, the number two, and then university. So follow me on social media, mostly Instagram. I am on Facebook too. And follow our company at Plus Two University if you're interested in learning more about how to get fast, and not just fast, but fast.
Yeah, man,
we'll go from there. Okay. And then our website is plus2u.com, plus2-u.com. And, we train athletes from all over the country. We have high school kids that'll come in. So even if you're listening to this podcast in Illinois or California, we have kids that'll fly in for 3-4 days, train. We do consulting where, you know, we'll come in and assess you and we'll send you back with a plan telling you where you should focus some of your efforts. And you take that plan back to your own coach and, you know, we can help you, or maybe we just have a conversation.
The guy that does it all. Well, thank you very much for the stories. I have a feeling there just might be a round two. And I'm looking forward to our next chat.
All right, buddy. I appreciate everything you do.